I'd like to call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, February 3rd. We're meeting today in Room Capitol Building in Room 205. Please silence your cell phones as courtesy. Present committee members are Senator Van Imhoff, Senator Geisel, Senator Baggage, Senator Michicki, and myself, Senator Wilson. Today we'll do an overview of Senate Bill 36. Today we'll hear an overview of Senate Bill 36, the optometry and optometrist, which is sponsored by Senator Kathy Geisel. It's my intent to hear the bill and begin public testimony and set the bill aside for further consideration. Now I would like to welcome our prime sponsor of the bill, Senator Geisel, and her staff at the table to present the bill. Senator, please state your name for the record when you're all set and ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm State Senator Kathy Geisel. I represent Senate District N. That's N as in November. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 36 would update the Alaska optometry statutes, aligning it with optometrists' modern-day scope of practice, and allow the Board of Optometry to regulate that profession as other boards do. The current Alaska statute defining the practice of optometry is 41 years old. So at the outset, Mr. Chairman, I want to spend a few minutes just kind of outlining the function of a professional regulatory board. And I do this because most legislators have not served on a board. Before I was elected, I served two terms on the Board of Nursing. And in that seven-year period, I spent 5 years serving as the board's chair. So I'm very, very familiar with the regulatory process of a profession. I can tell you that a regulation project that would be a function of the board takes about a year to process. So any regulations that a professional regulatory board implements has to go out for a public comment period. But before it does that, as the board writes it, there is an assistant attorney general who is present with the board, assists them in the writing of it, making sure that it complies with the law. That goes out for public comment. That process then brings in public comments, which are evaluated. There is the Department of Law, again, reviews all of this, and it goes to the lieutenant governor for signing. So it is not a rapid process. Takes about a year. What we do in these halls is we enact statute. These are broad statements of authority that then the board defines out the specifics in regulation. So I just want to clarify that. All boards go through this same process when they're regulating a profession. So the Board of Optometry has four professionals on it, four optometrists, and one member of the public. Again, this is a common procedure for a professional regulatory board because the purpose of these boards is the protection of the public with the safe provision of whatever that profession's services are. So that public person, one person, two people, there's two on the Board of Nursing, there's one on this board, are there to voice the concerns of the public related to the practice of whatever the profession is, to make sure that they're doing it appropriately. So while board membership may change, these are typically four-year terms on these boards. Typically, they can renew for a second 4 years. So while those members may change, the law doesn't change. The Assistant Attorney General is always present to assist and oversee the regulation writing. So you may hear people making statements like, well, the Board of Optometry will, on a whim, do this, that, or the other thing. But there are no whims in this process. It is highly overseen, and board members take their role very seriously. So Senate Bill 36 does a number of things. This is my staff, Jane Conway. She's going to take you through a sectional of the bill. But one of the things that it does, I want to flesh out a bit more for members. Because again, it's a nuance that a lot of people don't know unless you're in the healthcare industry. So it defines the prescription drug schedules that can be prescribed by an optometrist, and that's in Section 3. So if you want to turn there, I believe it's on, I thought I knew which page.
Page 2.
Okay. Page 2, line 12 through 15. And you see in line 13, the beginning of that line, the word controlled substance. So I want to talk about what controlled substances are, and it will actually illustrate what I'm talking about in terms of the problem we're facing right now. So I believe committee members have a document that looks like this, possibly on your desk today. The top of it says drug schedules. And I realize now that I didn't annotate its source. I apologize for that, but it comes from the Drug Enforcement Administration's website.
We have distributed it right now.
Oh, pardon me. It hasn't been distributed yet, and it's coming now. And, of course, it will be put online for the public who is listening so they can review it. So I'll wait for you to get that in your hands. So this comes from the federal government. The state also has a list of controlled substances, but the reason these drugs are controlled is because they have a potential for abuse. And depending on their potential for abuse or dependency, they're ranked in different schedules. That's what it's called, schedules. So you'll see there Schedule 1. Schedule 1 has drugs that have, it states, no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. In there you see LSD, you see marijuana, you see ecstasy, peyote, pretty clear. Schedule 2. Schedule 2 drugs have a high potential for abuse and could lead to serious, severe psychological or physical dependence. So these are stronger drugs. Cocaine, you see methadone there, you see fentanyl, oxycodone. Again, these are terms, words I'm sure you've heard before. High risk of abuse and addiction. Chemical dependency. Schedule 3 drugs. These are moderate to low potential for physical or psychological dependence. So here we see codeine. We see ketamine. We see testosterone. So we're moving down in level of concern, right, in terms of dependency and abuse. So then we see Schedule 4 drugs. Schedule 4 drugs have a low potential for abuse or risk of dependence, and you see the listing there. And then last of all, there's Schedule 5. These have a lower potential. The reason I point this out is because this bill calls out hydrocodone. It calls out controlled substances. Now, I wanted to make sure that you knew that right now, optometrists can prescribe hydrocodone. And the ability to do that is actually the result of a 2014 bill. It was a bill sponsored by Senator Donnie Olson. He is my colleague in healthcare that serves in the Senate. I'm an advanced nurse practitioner. He is a physician. It was Senate Bill 162. The reason that we had to do this bill is because hydrocodone was changed in its schedules in 2014. And so this is a medication that is used by optometrists. It was being moved up in the schedules by the federal government. You can see on your schedule, it falls under Schedule 2. It had been a Schedule 3. Previously, optometrists were permitted to prescribe Schedule 3. Because the federal government changed, we had to go through a piece of legislation. It had to go through this process to get approved. If the board had its full authority as a board, that wouldn't have happened. They would have simply been able to update their regulations. It would have saved time. It would have saved the cost of a piece of legislation. So I just point that out as an illustration of why it's so important that these boards have some latitude to update their regulations, their scope of practice, as technology changes or as, in this case, a drug schedule changes. Optometrists cannot prescribe Schedule 1 or 2. The other thing I want to point out about it is that they cannot prescribe any of these drugs unless they have authorization from the DEA, the federal government, to prescribe them. And this is a special authorization that healthcare providers receive. We are given a individual prescription identification number to prescribe controlled substances. This is vetted by the federal government. It's not given to just anyone. It is another representation of the quality of care given by optometrists. They are authorized by the federal government to use controlled substances. The bill does not expand the scope of practice of optometry. The vast majority of Alaskans visit one of the more than 150 optometrists in our state that take care of their eye care needs, vision tests, eyewear prescriptions, general eye exams. Nationally, 85% of Americans see an optometrist. That's likely even higher in Alaska, but that's the national statistic. Optometrist practice are located all over Alaska. In addition, optometrists commonly travel to the more remote areas, something that nurse practitioners do as well. You'll see, I believe, in your packet, you have a listing of the various communities where optometrists are located. There are about 63 optometrists in Anchorage, about 7 here in Juneau, and more than 76 spread over 16 communities, from Bethel to Nome, Plowock to Ketchikan. By contrast, there are approximately 20 ophthalmologists. So you see, access to care is an issue. These are credible, safe healthcare providers, Mr. Chairman. And there's been significant pushback on this bill, which is frankly unwarranted. It does not expand the scope of practice. These are very safe clinicians with a sound education program, carefully vetted by their board. Mr. Chairman, last week we heard from the Department of Health and Human Services. We were given an update on the status of the Medicaid reforms that we put into place last year. And one of the significant reforms that I particularly championed was the ability of mental health therapists to practice more fully in their scope of practice. We have a law in place, sadly, that actually restricts their practice. It requires a psychiatrist present in their clinic 30% of the time. That is very, very difficult for a mental health therapist clinic to have present. It's a high bar to achieve. It's very expensive. It adds to the cost of health care. And these are clinicians that are very competent. It's a change that we want to make in the law to open the door for full scope of practice by that particular healthcare profession. Today, in the Education Committee, we heard from members of the profession that their highest concern was the cost of healthcare for the teaching staff throughout the state. So again, that access to care, the cost of insurance, all of those things, we have some control over by how we force the regulation or limitation of our healthcare professionals. So I just put that out there, Mr. Chairman. You know, one of the measures of the safety of a clinician is the cost of their malpractice insurance. You know, there's a lot of concern that optometrists will run amok, do things that are dangerous and damaging to people. So when we look at the rates for malpractice insurance, they're actually a type of quantification of the risk of that profession or that individual and the number of adverse events that have occurred either by that profession or by that individual. And if you look at the malpractice rates for optometry, you'll see that they're very low. In fact, I was surprised at how low they are. They're lower than mine. In fact, nearly half what mine as a family practice nurse practitioner costs. So I just suggest Mr. Chairman, that that is a measure of competency. The insuring agencies do not see these as high-risk clinicians, nor have they had high amounts of liability due to malpractice. This bill would simply allow optometry to conduct itself just like all the other healthcare professions. You'll see in all the other board languages, should you go through the statute book, the three other prescribing professions are nursing, pharmacy, and dentistry. And the common phrase is that they would practice, quote, under regulations adopted by the board. So this is extremely common. You see it for chiropractic examiners, dentistry, medicine, physical and occupational therapists, pharmacy. It's time, Mr. Chairman, for the Board of Optometry to have that same ability to regulate that profession. Mr. Chairman, if you would like, I have staff here that can take you through a sectional of the bill.
First, you might have to open up to questions, right?
Absolutely. I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions from the committee thus far?
Maybe one, just if I may,
Mr. Chairman. Senator Baggage?
Senator Giesel, when you mentioned the rates, I had asked my aide, Richard Benavides, to do a little bit of research on where optometry is practiced and where the scope of service is more similar to the scope that would be allowed in this legislation. Could the low rates also be driven by the current statutes and the limitations to that statute? So lower rates of malpractice insurance could be driven by knowledge of the scope of service, because there's less of a scope of service, less invasive surgery, those kinds of things. Could that be the driving force for the lower rates of workers' comp?
Well, Alaska has one of the broadest scope of practice for nurse practitioners, and my rate of insurance is the same across the nation. It's $1,000 a year that I pay to carry malpractice insurance. I have had no malpractice incidences, and we in Alaska have one of the leading scope of practice. So that would be a question for the insurance agency, or perhaps some of the optometrists could answer that question more fully.
Thank you very much.
Senator Ben Lanaimo.
Thank you. So, Senator Giesel, you mentioned the controlled substance in the Section 3. So I have a couple-part question. You mentioned, is it hydrocodone? Okay. So it says, including a controlled substance. Should we, would it make sense to put in there in parentheses or somehow denote that particular drug that was addressed in 2014, hydrocodone? And the reason being is that I understand that optometrists are not allowed to provide or subscribe schedules 2 and 1 per their DEA drug card that has a letter saying that they're a letter M or whatever, being mid-level. So they're not allowed to prescribe drugs. But they have an exception. So do we need to somehow... would it make sense to include that exception in there? So that's the first question. And then the second question is, when a drug goes from a level 3 to a level 2, I assume that there's a reason, then why should doctors normally not able to give level 2 drugs can carve out to allow that particular drug if it's been moved for a reason? So I did throw two questions at you, and I'm sorry, but thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. First of all, you will notice on Section 3 of the bill, that's on page 2, line 11, that it says this section is repealed and reenacted to read, okay? And so in the statute that is in our books right now, and I happen to be holding it, and there's probably a set of statutes in here somewhere, but it actually says may and use a pharmacologic agent containing hydrocodone. So it was called out specifically. So consequently, let's say, for example, I'm going to use the drug Tramadol, which actually was changed by the DEA 2 years ago, moved into a different schedule, and we'll talk more about that because I got a bill related to that. But regardless, if that were suddenly moved up to Schedule 2, it's not a drug that optometrists use, but let's say it was, just for discussion, then if these statutes were in place, yes, we would have to have another bill that would put put tramadol next to hydrocodone. And for reference, this is on page 513 of the current statute books, and you can see the reference there if you have the 2016 book, Senator Begich. Thank you. And then your could you remind me, Senator Von Imhoff, what was your second question? Why was it moved up?
Yeah, well, so in any drug, so even hydrocodone.
Yes.
Okay. So any drug that moves from into 1 and 2, will this bill then allow that drug to still be continually used by optometrists even though it's in a new drug category?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, absolutely. If you read the wording, it says, including a controlled substance in the practice of optometry if the pharmacologic agent is used in a manner consistent with the standards adopted by the board. It is very broad. So that pharmacologic agent, the controlled substance, if it's moved up and it's being used in a proper way, would be authorized. Just for clarity, Schedule 1 drugs are not authorized to any clinicians. They're used more for experimentation type things, with the exception, of course, of marijuana, which we've legalized for some reason.
Okay. Okay, so this basically what you're saying is that any drugs that optometrists are currently using now that move up to a new schedule, under this bill, it will be carved out that they could allow to still use them. How often are drugs reclassified, would you say?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I actually can't respond to that necessarily. We know in 2014 that hydrocodone was moved up, and tramadol has been moved up as well. Not to a level 2. Not to a level 2.
Two drugs so far.
Mm.
Okay.
Right. Just hydrocodone. So that's up to the DEA. Just for context, though, in the Medicaid reform bill last year, we've put into place a prescription monitoring drug program. Okay? And so clinicians who are prescribing these medications must enter that data, and it gives us a database to look to in case our client is overusing. We would have some awareness of that.
Yes, I do recall that. Okay, the second question, you've basically answered it, so thank you very much.
Sure.
Senator Gisley, continue if you want to do an overview of the...
That would be my aide, Jane Conway, so I'll let Jane put herself on the record.
Thank you. My name is Jane Conway, staff to Senator Giesel. I'm going to go through a short sectional analysis with you, which I do also believe is in your packet. For Section 1 of Senate Bill 36, AS 0872050, and that allows the board to continue to adopt its regulations updated to its current practice. And then moving on to Section 2, at the bottom of the first page of the bill, moves the continuing education requirements back into regulation, something that the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, CCED, had desired. Continuing education is still required by current statute. However, it could be noted that the hours and the subjects to be determined by the board, as with other professions. Currently, our current regulations for CE hours and the Board of Optometry regulations are higher than what is actually in statute. So this is a very, very obsolete section of the bill that we'd like to change. Section 3, AS 0872272A, clarifies the current statute for the board to determine prescribed drug schedules, which Senator Giesel has outlined in detail, including standards and limitations on practice determined by the board. Going on to Section 4, AS 0872, it sets limitations on practice, ensuring that no license may perform any procedure beyond the scope of the licensee's education, training, and experience as established by the regulatory board. This allows for future new and improved diagnostics and therapeutic procedures as determined by the board while not having to return to this body, to the legislature, for every new development or technological advance. And Section 5, AS0872303, it updates the definition of optometry because it is decades old, and it was repealed and reenacted and rewritten by the legal department to keep it current with current practice and more readable. And that is the end of the sectional analysis.
Questions on that?
Okay. Well, I think I have one. Is that right?
Senator Barrett?
Senator Wilson. My question when I'm looking at the old definition, which I actually hadn't looked at till just now, I hadn't bothered to look at the definition section of the bill, and I'm sorry for that. But it says that it's specifically prohibited under the old definition, other than by use of laser, x-ray, surgery, or pharmaceutical agents. It specifically, and you're eliminating that language here. Could you go in a little more detail as to why you would be doing that?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that's a very good question. And the reason is because currently the optometrist can order x-rays. They use diagnostic lasers, different than therapeutic. Diagnostic, they shine the bright light in your eye and they, sure. they make a diagnosis. So those things are currently happening. So putting this new wording in actually parallels their current authorities already and makes that form of definition obsolete. And I know that our... one of our expert testifiers today would also be able to discuss that with you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record. At this time, we'll open public testimony for Senate Bill 36. I believe in the room, first on deck, we have Dr. Forrest. I'm sorry, Dr. Forrest, Messersmith, sorry.
Yes, ma'am. Chair, Senators, thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
And I'm sorry, Dr. We also want to make sure for the time we'll allow, I don't think we have that many folks in the room, so about 4 minutes for testimony.
Okay. That will be plenty. My name is Forrest Messerschmidt. I'm a fourth-generation Alaskan. I'm an optometrist. I've been in practice in Juneau for 28 years. Recently completed a four-year term on the State Board of Optometry. I believe Senate Bill 36 is good legislation. It modernizes the statutes, as you've heard, allows details of regulation to be determined by the state board, as is the current standard through dentistry, nurse practitioners, and medicine. There's no question that Alaskan optometric physicians should be held to the same high standard of care as other medical professionals, but it's absurd to suggest that other professions can regulate their own and optometry can't. There really is no good reason for that. Over 28 years of practice, much has changed in eye care. More than half of my practice is medical in nature, routinely diagnosing and managing complex cases that have required referral even a few years ago. Many of these cases require close working relationships with eye surgeons. Mutual trust allows me to consult with other medical providers on a daily basis. Conditions that used to require travel south, Seattle or Anchorage, are now managed competently and effectively with reduced travel or no travel at all. Even though much of what we do now was not allowed a few short years ago, state law has been incredibly slow, 41 years slow, in recognizing the rapid improvements in skills and training of current optometrists and new graduates. You will hear some concern with regard to surgery and its definition. It's important that you know that Alaskan optometrists perform surgery now, as defined by the medical community. We routinely do things such as foreign body removal, incision and drainage of eyelid cysts, corneal scraping or debridement, lacrimal dilation and irrigation. Even things as simple as eyelash removal is considered surgery. All surgery is not invasive surgery. No optometrist wants to perform procedures that we aren't trained for. We simply want to do what we can do, what we're trained to do, competently. You'll hear others cry wolf about patient harm that will occur once again if SB 36 is passed, when they know from the past 40 years of optometry law that this has not been the case. Optometry malpractice insurance rates, as you've heard, are the lowest of all doctoral level providers for a reason, and I urge you to review that Senate document that you should have regarding malpractice insurance. Opponents of this bill miss the point of why it is important. It's about the patient's best interest. It's not about us doctors. Simple math, no matter how you look at it, there are not enough skilled ophthalmologists to serve our rapidly aging population. As skills and training expand, we need all eye care physicians on board to be able to practice to our full level of training and expertise. As a former board member, I can tell you that nothing is more important than protection of the public. I don't foresee any dramatic change in how optometric physicians practice in Alaska with the passage of this bill. It certainly will not change how I practice. Optometrists will continue to provide quality care, protecting their patients' well-being as they would their own. I do foresee a streamlining of the legislative process to take on more pressing issues and a tremendous savings in time and effort and money wasted debating issues that should be common sense. Optometry is a well-trained, highly skilled profession that provides the majority of first-line eye care in Alaska. As our education and professional standards evolve, we should be able to practice to the highest level of care consistent with our training and education. Optometry has always been a cautious profession and will continue to be so into the future. I have no doubt that the board is fully capable of providing oversight and maintaining standards needed to safeguard the public. SB 36 is good for optometry. It removes a recurring burden for precious legislative time, and most importantly, it's good for Alaskans. And I respectfully urge you to support Senate Bill 36. Thank you.
Thank you. That open up for questions. Are you willing to take questions?
Sure.
Any questions? Senator Onedema.
Okay. Some of the issues that I've been hearing is, I think you mentioned earlier, or there was mentioned earlier, lasers. Lasers are being used now, I think Senator Geese was saying, about looking at eyes and making diagnosis. None of these lasers at this time, can you verify, like puncture the eye or cut the eye or anything along that line?
Correct. Optometry doesn't perform any procedures that physically penetrate the eye in a cutting manner. But there are, I think, three states that use lasers in a therapeutic manner that is considered surgery.
But it doesn't penetrate the eye.
The light penetrates the eye, but a laser doesn't cut except where it's focused. So it's just like regular daylight coming into your eyes until it's actually focused. So you can cut inside the eye without cutting to penetrate the eye.
You do so that.
There's a
you
procedure
do that.
Called posterior capsulotomy, which is done as a secondary procedure after cataract surgery, but there are a few states that that's performed by optometrists.
here in Alaska?
Not in Alaska.
So, okay. So what, in your opinion, you've been on the board, you're well aware of this has been forward to the legislature for, I understand, several years now. What are the concerns about the opponents to this bill, about lasers in particular and invasive surgery and so forth? What can you say to mitigate their concerns?
Mitigating their concerns is something that I'm not necessarily concerned with. I've been practicing for 30 years, and I use non-focusing lasers every day. Maybe not on every patient, but almost every patient for diagnostic purposes. And I'm not going to be performing posterior capsulotomy on patients. But patients coming out of Oklahoma, doctors coming out of Oklahoma, are fully trained in that. And if they graduated and are licensed in Oklahoma, then they can do those procedures.
Anywhere in the States?
As long as the law allows that. And there may be some oversight involved with that. I'd have to research that. But this whole process, everything is changing as we speak. And it is a turf war, because as things change, new abilities to treat disease, what we can do now, we may not be able to do in the future to treat certain diseases. So as long as we are trained, have the education, the background, the training, and can perform a procedure competently, we should be able to do that. Now, if it were a nucleation of the eye, we obviously would have to go to a medical school and go through the medical training that an ophthalmologist has, but that's not what we do. Surgical procedures we do are things like pulling eyelashes.
Senator Richicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for you. You made a statement about being trained in Oklahoma currently, being qualified for certain types of surgery.
Yeah.
Is that a state requirement or out of certain universities?
Certain universities. And I'm not fully up to give you every university, but there are a number of states that you can practice those procedures under law.
So if you're if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
If you're a graduate of that program in those certain universities, is there reciprocity in Alaska, or they would have to be licensed in our state before they were able to practice those?
They would have to be licensed in the state. There's reciprocity, but just because they come into the state of Alaska doesn't mean they can practice more than what the state of Alaska allows. Yeah, and that's regulated by the board. Should be regulated by the board.
Go ahead, Senator Matuki.
So from those certain universities, is that a optometrist plus? Is it a separate certification, qualification, or?
I would think that in most, I can't speak to specifics with that, but most of the graduates of those schools are going to have a section of their education and clinical training that specifies those abilities, so that when they come out of school, that is part of their degree, part of the degree program.
Last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your view, would you say that the regulations would state that with a certain level of training, you're able to provide this kind of service, and then if you have this extra certification, that you would be qualified to provide something else? Is that how the board might look at something like that?
I think they might do. I think they'd be pretty guarded in that, and they'd have to have some sort of oversight with that, particularly for a new graduate. And if it passes muster with the Attorney General's office and public comment, then yes, and as long as it's something that we're trained in and can perform competently. Yeah.
Thank you.
Senator Baggage.
A number of questions. You mentioned Oklahoma, and I actually, part of the work that my aide Richard Benavides did was to look at some of the Oklahoma examples, because there are, in fact, only a few states that allow surgical procedures by optometrists?
Three. Louisiana is one, Oklahoma.
And I think
can't remember the other.
Third one might have been North Carolina. No, it's not North Carolina. Kentucky. The in turf wars don't matter to me. Public safety does. And one of the concerns that I have that comes specifically out of Oklahoma, where surgery is not just allowed but explicitly allowed by the legislature. It wasn't a board that made that determination. It was the legislature. When the AMA did do research on the number of people who had to do a second surgery in that regard, the same surgery, there were, and I'm looking at the report now, Mr. Chairman, there were 1,100 eyes that received an LTP, which, frankly, I can't describe in a word, but it's a laser surgery.
For glaucoma.
Right, for glaucoma. Of those performed by ophthalmologists, about 17% had to be redone, but of those performed by optometrists, the identification was almost 36% had to be redone. And that raises concerns for me at a public safety issue. And by the way, thank you for your note. I wrote back to you, and part of the reason was I'm confused about this single piece. I recognize the respect that optometrists need to regulate themselves, but the idea of, and so I also looked at some curricula, you know, for different universities that had high ratings for optometry and ophthalmology, and I looked through all 4 years of the coursework and the additional coursework on top of that. There really is a radical difference, isn't there, between how an optometrist is educated and how an ophthalmologist is educated?
You know, an optometrist goes straight from undergraduate to concentration on the eye primarily. This is with the body, systemic health secondarily. And yes, the surgical portion of an ophthalmologist's training is something that optometry doesn't get.
So, yeah. Mr. Chairman, just one follow-up.
Yes.
You had mentioned that one of the things that you would be willing, you know, if you decided you wanted to go into surgery, I mean, I know you've been doing this for long enough, you're not going back, but but that if you were recommending it to somebody, you mentioned earlier in your testimony that you would go back to school and get surgery training.
Right.
So, given that, when I look at the legislation and the debate is really over the surgery component and the removal of the definition of surgery, are we really talking about a tighter and clearer definition of surgery more than anything here?
Well, the problem with the surgery is that we perform surgery now, and we don't want to lose what we already do, what we already have, what becomes a daily thing. And not every surgery can be very minor in the doctor's eyes, whether you're an ophthalmologist, a brain surgeon, or an optometrist. The thing to remember is, and I think there was a letter in here from one of the doctors up north, I think it was a Dr. Guess, concerning going back. He was a cataract surgeon and went back for training as a retinal surgeon. That was a choice that he made, but as I believe by the statute, he could have performed retinal surgery and probably did perform some retinal surgeries as he was trained already. He just chose to go back to get more extensive training. So there was no limitation on what he could do as it stood. It all fell back on the individual.
Mr. Chairman, under the current statute.
Yeah, that's what I believe, yeah. Yeah, so it's... Integrity didn't stop getting doled out with ophthalmology. I mean, we're all professionals. We all need to be able to practice to the standard that we're trained. And almost all of us, there's bad apples everywhere, regard the patient's interest, well-being, quality of care as the utmost of what we do every day.
I'm going to go to Senator Giesel and then just remind folks that this is sort of for the public testimonial piece, and that I think what we should do is probably invite some experts to give expert testimony back so we can go a little bit further.
I would agree with that,
yes. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Doctor, again, I've served on the Board of Nursing, chaired it for 5 years, and the Board of Nursing actually regulates advanced nurse practitioners. That's me. I'm board certified nationally in family practice. So the board, while I was there, established an advisory opinion database, and it covers all four of the professions that single board regulates. And so this is an example. The Alaska Neonatology Associates came to the board and asked that two of their neonatal nurse practitioners be permitted under their scope of practice to perform circumcisions. This is surgery.
Yeah.
The board determined, based on individual review of these two clinicians' credentials, that in fact they were qualified to do circumcision. And so there is an advisory opinion officially from the board on the website stating they can do that. Fluoroscopy for registered nurse anesthetists. This, again, was reviewed by the board, found that the additional education qualified them to do fluoroscopy. This is a pretty serious intervention. It found, when asked, that advanced nurse practitioners, RNs, LPNs, or nurse assistants, it was beyond their scope of practice to administer x-rays. So these kinds of things are done by a regulatory board that has under regulations by the board as the determination. Is this something that the optometry board has ever been able to do in regulating your profession?
I have, in my limited time on the board, I did not see any instances where we took an individual and approved one individual to perform a task and not another, with the exception of with expansion of scope laws when I first came out of school, you couldn't even use diagnostic drugs, topical drugs in Alaska. And then that was approved, and then a few years went by, and then we went to topical drugs. So there was a grandfathering in of the practitioners that had lesser training so that they could practice to the level of what they were capable of, but they were not licensed to use therapeutic drugs. They could still use the diagnostic drugs. So that's the only exception that I have seen in the past. But in fact, I was not aware that was actually an option of what you just described. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up comment, but this would be the type of thing, and actually it sounds like you somewhat did that in evaluating the training and determining a slight expansion, so to speak, or approval for qualified individuals to function under their profession.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Before we move on, I just want to remind folks that we're going to try to stick to a little bit more of the public testimonial today and call back the experts. If you want to get back in touch with us from the optometry and ophthalmology, contact my office and we can set up another day and time to give sort of expert testimonial to the committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up to testify is Dr. David Zambro. And please remember to state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators, for the opportunity to be here today. It's good to be part of the process. My name is David Zumbro. I'm a retina surgeon. I practice in Anchorage, and I'm a partner with Alaska Retina Consultants. I've been in Alaska practicing full-time since 2010. Prior to that, I served 20 years in the military. My last job in the Army, I was Chief of Ophthalmology at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas. I also served as the Chairman of the Credentials Committee for that institution. So I have a unique experience. I had the unique opportunity to be on both sides of ophthalmology training, both as an apprentice and a mentor. I'm not here for a turf war. I don't like when it's construed that way. I'm here to educate the differences between ophthalmologists and optometrists regarding our training and our level of experience when it comes to eye care. I believe this is not a simple housekeeping bill for the Board of Optometry. I think it's a dramatic statute which redefines a profession. And this bill would allow non-medical doctors and non-surgeons, doctors of optometry, to define what other non-medical doctors and non-surgeons, doctors of optometry still, can do to an eye surgically. Optometric training is not surgical. We don't have the same experience. It also does not require a mastery of the different systems of the entire human body, like medical school physicians' assistants and certified nurse practitioners have. I'd like to call your attention to paragraph 6 of section 08.72.050, which is new in the, it's a new statute according to the bill. It says, the board shall adopt regulations describing the scope of practices for licensees to perform ophthalmic surgeries and non-invasive surgeries. So that in effect, they're asking to perform surgery. Now, as I was listening to the testimony earlier, it struck me that perhaps there's a semantic difference in the what surgery means, and we can get to that later. But I think that's probably one of the key points of this issue. But I'd also like to point out that non-invasive is misleading. To me, surgery is surgery is surgery and has risks and complications, no matter who performs it or how minimal it may seem. And I think everybody in here believes that patient safety is paramount and the one performing the surgery should have the proper training and experience. But doesn't it also make sense that if ophthalmic surgery is going to be defined and regulated, that the current eye surgeons and physicians should be part of crafting those definitions and regulations? I would also like to call your attention to section 08.72.050, which adds the phrase, including prescription and use of pharmaceutical agents for treatment of eye disease. Simultaneously, it repeals the current 08.72.272, which prohibits globe injections and use of Botox, and replaces that with language that says a licensee may prescribe and use a pharmaceutical agent, including a controlled substance, in the practice of optometry if the pharmaceutical agent is used in a manner consistent with standards of the board. By repealing the current statute, this bill permits globe injections, which is injection into the eye. Lately, over the past 10 to 12 years, injections into the eye of medicine have gone up dramatically for treatment of diseases like macular degeneration, diabetes, retinal vein occlusions. If it's true that they won't do the injections in the eye, then why change the current statute? I don't understand that. If it's true that they will, then we need to have a long discussion regarding the risks, the complications, the training and experience associated with these eye injections. And then maybe I'm confused, but this same statute allows optometrists complete access to the schedule of controlled substances. I do a lot of eye surgery, which is considered painful. I take care of a lot of traumatic eye injuries, which is considered painful. I hardly prescribe hydrocodone. Most of my patients' pain is managed without opioids. And I think in this day of opioid abuse, we have to take that seriously. I talked to one of my colleagues in Fairbanks regarding controlled substances. She's an ophthalmologist up there. She replied, I don't even know what my DEA number is, because when you write a prescription for a controlled substance, you have to put your DEA number down. So when you do it enough, you memorize it, but when you stop doing it, you forget it. And I have to keep mine written down because I don't know what it is. So, you know, I don't think this is a simple housekeeping bill. I think it redefines a profession. I don't think it's a conservative approach. I have many friends who are optometrists. I've been on bowling teams with them. I've been in fantasy football leagues. We're all concerned about patient safety. We're all for taking great care of our patients. This kind of process can ruffle feathers, and it leads to acrimony, which actually all it does is hurt patient care. I'm for education that illuminates the difference between optometry and ophthalmology, because I think that's best for everybody if they understand. I am for optometry boards regulating themselves in the practice of optometry. And I think that there's a difference between ophthalmology and optometry. Last thing I would like to say is that in the course of my career, I worked with three ophthalmologists who were optometrists prior to going to medical school. They decided that they wanted to do ophthalmology, and they took that path. I also have another friend who's an ENT surgeon who became a who was an optometrist prior to his medical training. And he did the same thing. And so the pathway always already exists. There's nobody prohibiting optometrists from doing surgery if they want to become an ophthalmologist. They just have to go to medical school and do a residency and become board certified. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Doctor. Okay. We're going to postpone questions for a later date when we can. So if committee members do have questions for the ophthalmologist or optometrist, please forward them to our office and we'll compile them and give them to those associations. Next up is Janie Hovenden. Oh, are you
Questions or?
Just for testimony, I'm sorry. Next up will be Dr. Rachel Reinhart.
Good afternoon, Chairman and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Dr. Rachel Reinhart, MD. I am honored to be here today in Juneau to testify on behalf of the American Academy of Ophthalmology, representing over 32,000 physicians worldwide. I am also a board-certified ophthalmologist from Washington State. I did my training at the University of Washington alongside Alaskans in the WAMI program, and also did my university or my surgical residency at the University of Washington. My most important job, though, is being a mom to my six-year-old son. But I donate my time. This is my fourth year now, donating my time away from my son, as we all routinely do, have to leave our families at home to stand up for bills that affect patient safety. And so I'm greatly appreciative of you allowing me to have this time today. We do respectfully ask you to oppose Senate Bill 36, and I'll give you my reasons. I'm going to very quickly respond to a few points that were brought up that I do have the answer to. Number one, when it's mentioned that there are no increase in claims to optometrists, there's an important distinction. The MDs have a required national reported database, meaning any claim that is brought upon an MD is required by law, federal law, to be placed in this data bank. And so it's very easy to follow those claims. Optometrists have no such required reporting program. So it's hard for us to know what type of claims have been made. Number two, optometrists and ophthalmologists receive the same reimbursement from primary or from Medicare and for private payers. There is not a lower reimbursement for optometrists, so the cost of care for an optometrist and ophthalmologist for a given CPT code or procedure is identical. Number three, malpractice insurance increases when surgery is done. So even within the field of ophthalmology, there are very two distinct tiers of what insurance premiums cost. Ophthalmologists who are no longer doing surgery have a profoundly lower premium than those who are still doing surgery. I have a feeling that if optometrists were suddenly doing surgery at a level near or equal to ophthalmologists, that it would be profoundly higher. And number four, my final point about lasers. Lasers are as sharp as a scalpel. They are a surgery tool, even though they're directed to different tissues in the eye. I have seen lenses be dislocated, retinal detachments, vitreous hemorrhages, and even perforation of the eye. So laser is a surgical tool. And you've heard today that optometrists simply want to govern themselves, that it's just an update. But Senate Bill 36, make no mistake, would allow optometrists to perform any and all surgeries, including scalpels, lasers, and needles. It would have a profound effect on patient safety. There is currently no state in the United States that allows a board of optometry to have total self-regulation over scope of practice. Senate Bill 36 would allow non-medical doctors and non-surgeons to completely redefine the practice of optometry into a surgical specialty. As we have heard, optometry is not a medical or surgical education. On average, optometrists receive approximately 1,900 hours of clinical care in their 4 years of optometry school, whereas ophthalmologists receive over 20,000 hours of direct medical clinical care. This is over 8 to 10 years post-surgery. And so with one-tenth the clinical training, Alaskans are now depending on you to recognize the difference in our skills and understand that surgery needs to be done by surgeons. And the eye does not exist in isolation. It's connected to the human body. And ophthalmologists are first and foremost doctors of the human body first. And it's only then that we are trusted by the public to layer on top of that skills to operate on the eye. And this is why, you know, two-thirds of congenital syndromes have a related eye finding, two-thirds. And this is why we spend years and hours admitting hundreds of patients into pediatric ICUs for complicated care. And the most common tumor inside the eye is metastatic. It means it's coming from somewhere else in the body. This is why ophthalmologists spend hundreds of hours, thousands of hours over many years taking neurology and OBGYN and family medicine. It's because, and it gives ophthalmologists a unique ability to put the eye in context with the human body as a whole and the implications, the potential systemic implications that come from eye disease or taking a scalpel or laser through the eye. And for the first time ever, we now have data that illustrates the harm caused by optometrists practicing outside their level of training. You brought up the study that, first of all, Oklahoma was the first and one of only three states in the country that allows optometrists to do lasers on the eye, which is surgery. A study published in a major medical journal within the last 6 months looked at about 1,400 eyes who underwent a surgical laser procedure for glaucoma patients. They found that there was a 189% increased hazard requiring additional laser in the same eye compared to the same laser done by ophthalmologists, a 189% hazard. This study illustrates a real concern for patient safety, but it also tells us that this is not a cost savings. And we've heard this argument that it will be cheaper for optometrists to have surgical privileges. And the reality is we now have data that shows that it's not only harmful, but it is not a cost savings. And to quote the investigators of the study, quote, "Health policymakers should be cautious about approving laser privileges for optometrists practicing in other states." So what does the public want? Yep, okay. I'm going to make two more very brief statements. And one is that there are 25 ophthalmologists in the state of Washington. It's a state of about 740,000. Washington State has 7 million. The ratio of ophthalmologists to the population is very similar. Number two, in Washington State has a definition of surgery that optometrists helped write and agree to. And it's a very specific definition of surgery. As far as narcotics, the reason why Vicodin was moved to Schedule 2 is because prescription narcotic deaths are now the number one cause of unintended death in this country. It surpasses car accidents. This is a national crisis. If legislators should be doing anything state to state, it should be thinking about how to take away the right to prescribe medications in certain groups. I would gladly relinquish my right. I think in the end, to be governed by your own, it's not the same as a nurse practitioner board. Nurse practitioners have a medical education where they've been trained on the whole body. This would be allowing optometrists who are non-medical, non-surgical doctors to simply redefine the scope of optometry. And patients in Alaska, your neighbors, your constituents are dependent on you to know the difference. And multiple studies have shown that. A National Consumer League paper showed that 95% of those polled want only an MD to operate on the eye, but there's profound confusion of the difference. And we have to respect the skill set. My closing statement is we have to respect the skill set. Both optometry and ophthalmology are required for good patient care. But when I flew up here on my 737, I don't want my pilot to build my plane. I don't want my Boeing engineer to pilot my plane. But both groups are necessary to get those patients from point A to point B. So optometry and ophthalmology work together for patient care, but it is not the same, and it's important that we keep the public safe. I'm very grateful for the time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay. We're now going to move to the phone lines. We have in Anchorage, Dr. Lat Nolan. For the record, please state your name and affiliation, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Chairman Wilson and members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for your time and for hearing the bill. I am Lad Nolan. I've been an optometrist in Alaska for about 14 years. Went to school down in Oregon, Pacific University, and did a residency down at the Roseburg Veterans Administration in Roseburg, Oregon. And I'm the current president of the Alaska Optometric Association, which represents over 150 optometrists across the state. And I won't repeat all the prior points that have been discussed, but I just wanted to express our association's support for the bill. We do believe that authorizing the Alaska Board of Optometry, you know, who will of course work with the Department of Law to do its job and regulate its own profession within the scope of its education, will be better able to serve the patients of Alaska. This is no different than what the boards of the other prescribing professions in Alaska are already doing. And I hear a lot about, you know, comparing the nurse practitioners with their medical training. You know, there's also dentists that are on that, those prescribing professions, and they're a similar situation to optometry as far as how their board is run. But we don't have those privileges at this point. So anyway, I just thank you for allowing me to testify today, and happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Doctor, for your time. Next up is Dr. Jeff Gunnarsson from Anchorage.
Hi. For the record, my name is Jeff Gunnarsson, O.D. I was born and raised in Ketchikan. I was the first Alaska Native optometrist. I have twice served as a member and a chair of the State Optometry Board under two different governors and past president of the Alaska Optometric Association. I practice in Anchorage and perform bush clinics in my younger days. So a brief history to those who are new to the issue. Optometry's professional doctor's degree was brought up to the same level of education as medicine and dentistry over 45 years ago. There's 4 years of undergraduate university, followed by a four-year graduate professional doctor program with available 1 to 2 year residencies for advanced education. And in the first 2 years, at many schools, the medical students and optometry students attend the same classes. So it's untrue that we don't have training in the entire body, nervous system, pharmacology, etc. It was not until 1988 that Alaska became the 50th and last state legislature to authorize optometrists to use drugs in practice. They were always delayed by opposition from organized ophthalmology protecting their turf. Now, the four learned professions of medicine, dentistry, optometry, and advanced practice nurses are all independent, all have their own boards, and are all currently authorized by Alaska law to prescribe drugs, including controlled narcotics, with DEA numbers. Alaska optometrists have had narcotic drug prescribing authority for the past 10 years with no issues, and the board will continue to carefully limit our supply so that no one seeks narcotics from our licensees. There's just not a problem there. Section 3 of the bill states that the standards must include limitations on practice. It's right there in SB 36. Now, optometrists are defined as physicians under federal Medicare and are held to the same standard of care as we treat Medicare and Medicaid patients and on the preferred provider insurance panels in Alaska. Optometry malpractice insurance, as you've heard, is very low. It's $485 annually in Alaska. And it's the same in states that have broader authority, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Louisiana, that have the laser authority you heard about, same insurance malpractice rate. Optometrists practice all over the state, provide the vast majority of eye care in Alaska, serving over 80 remote locations. The local optometrists are called upon at rural hospitals for their expertise. Now, treatment and travel costs increase greatly when routine care is provided by urban specialists. The cost is often travel and loss of work. Alaska needs the best new doctors of optometry, and these antiquated state statutes are a barrier to attracting the best and brightest to our state. Now, to be absolutely clear, SB 36 does not authorize any optometrist to do anything. It only updates 45-year-old statutes and gives the board authority to regulate, with emphasis on protecting the public, the same as the Alaska dentists and advanced practice nurses. So optometry doesn't have to return for legislation for every new advance in education or technology. I mean, who knows what will be advanced in 10 to 20 years? The statutes of the boards of dentistry and medicine and nursing do not have extensive lists of procedures they cannot do. They're board sets of details in regulation. Now, the legislature licenses professionals, which includes professional judgment as when to refer patients to specialists. Current optometry statute still requires optometrists to refer to medical doctors when appropriate. Doctors of optometry do not perform any of the invasive eye surgeries the ophthalmologists perform that are outside of our scope of education. All these cases are referred out. The same as family doctors refer to orthopedic surgeons, and dentists refer to oral surgeons. You know, the family MD is not trained the same as a neurosurgeon. But there's nothing in the state law that tells the family OD what he can and cannot do. That's all board regulated.
Doctor, if you can wrap it up, please.
The optometry board would never authorize optometrists to perform anything they're not educated, trained, and qualified to do. And this is crystal clear in Section 4 of SB 36. Now, most interestingly, every time optometrists come to any state legislature over the past 45 years, the ophthalmologists in their national academy, which you just heard, has testified using outrageous scare tactics that optometrists would be killing or blinding people, causing tragic harm to the public, a medical emergency, that we didn't go to medical school. Dentists don't go to medical school.
Dr. Gunnison?
Anyway, frightening ads on the radio, etc. It goes on and on, and none of these ridiculous claims are true or have ever come true.
Dr. Gunnison?
What you'll do is delay by
doctor.
Claiming to have some, like, expert.
We're going to move on to
same things you've already
Dr. heard. Paul Burney, next for testimony.
Pardon me?
We're going to have to move on, doctor.
Okay, I was just finishing. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. We're going to move on to Dr. Paul Burney.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson and fellow committee members. My name is Paul Burney. I'm an optometrist. I'm the current chair of the Alaska Board of Examiners in Optometry. I'm also the past president of the Alaska Optometric Association. For the past 17 years, I've been the center director of Pacific Cataract and Laser Institute in Anchorage. Pacific Cataract and Laser Institute, also known as PCLI, is a referral center limited to medical and surgical eye care. As an optometrist with PCLI, my practice is entirely devoted to medical eye care and pre- and post-surgical eye care. I work with an ophthalmic surgeon and a certified registered nurse anesthetist, and together we provide quality, affordable surgical eye care to Alaskans. In fact, we are the largest provider of cataract care in the state of Alaska. PCLI's approach to eye care is to work collaboratively as a team and optimize each practitioner's training and skills. To that end, I perform the pre-surgical examination, preoperative counseling, and post-operative care. Our nurse anesthetist administers anesthesia for surgery and manages the patient's response to the anesthesia. Our surgeon performs the cataract surgery. And although I've lived in Alaska for 17 years, I've practiced in this capacity for over 30 years. You've heard arguments against SB 36 from both organized ophthalmology and ophthalmologists. Those arguments are exclusionary and state that only an ophthalmologist is trained medically and only an ophthalmologist is capable of performing the very tasks that the nurse anesthetist that I work with and I perform perform on a daily basis for years. Modern healthcare is often delivered collaboratively with team members from multiple professions. With this approach, quality of care is maintained. Patients have better access to care, and frequently care can be delivered more affordably to the patient. Exclusionary attitudes and approaches suggesting that only someone who has attended medical school can deliver medical care are antiquated and do not ensure better quality. And in fact, they often limit patient access to care. We've also heard opposition to the bill that states the bill will allow optometrists to do surgery and perform procedures that we're not trained to do, even though the bill specifically states the board cannot write regulations for procedures that licensees aren't trained and educated to do. The Alaska State Department of Law oversees all healthcare boards, including optometry, to ensure that regulations written by those boards are within the confines of the statute. I can assure you that while I'm on the board of optometry, the board will not write regulations allowing optometrists to do procedures that we're not trained to do. After I leave the board, I can assure you the same, because the Department of Law will oversee regulations and not allow regulations to be written without proof of adequate training. This bill does allow the Board of Optometry to determine the details of the practice of optometry, but you've heard arguments that the board can't be trusted to establish and enforce those regulations. As chair of the Alaska Board of Optometry, I can assure you that the primary concern of the board is the safety of the public. In the 6 years that I've served on the board, we've never had a public complaint that was serious enough to even consider disciplinary action. I doubt there are many other healthcare professions in Alaska that can claim a similar track record. In general, optometrists are conservative and cautious practitioners, and the passage of SB 36 would not change their conservative nature. SB 36 would be good for the state of Alaska. This bill puts the regulatory details regarding the practice of optometry in the authority of the Board of Optometry. These changes are important to allow the profession and practice of optometry to incorporate new technologies and advances in eye care as they occur. As you know, the current statute requires that optometry come to the legislature to incorporate those changes.
Dr. Barney, if you can wrap up.
Yes. I'm sorry?
If you can wrap up, please.
Oh, yes, I can. SB 36 would allow optometry to regulate itself similar to dentistry, advanced practice nursing, and medicine. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to move on to Dr. Kelly Lawrence. And if you can let folks know that you have 4 minutes to testify. Dr. Lawrence? If you want to check your phone to make sure it's not muted.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay, great. I'm sorry about that. So my name is Kelly Lorenz. Thank you so much for having me this afternoon. I'm here to testify regarding Senate Bill 36. My name is Kelly Lorenz, and I'm a board-certified ophthalmologist practicing in Anchorage, Alaska at Ophthalmic Associates. I earned my MD from The Ohio State University and completed a surgical internship, ophthalmology residency, and glaucoma fellowship at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, Michigan. I practiced in California and acted as chief of the ophthalmology department at the Alaska Native Medical Center. And I'm reaching out to oppose Senate Bill 36 primarily because it's just too vague for any serious consideration. For example, on Section 1, page 1, line 13, there's no definition for what is considered ophthalmic surgery or what is a non-invasive procedure. And to be left up to the Board of Optometry at some later date, I think, is irresponsible, and this should be defined now and not later. In Section 2, page 2, lines 1 through 10, I see specific recommendations for continuing education regarding pharmaceuticals and injections, but no recommendations regarding proposed surgical procedures. So would this, again, be determined at some later date by the Board of Optometry without any input from the State Medical Board? Section 3, page 2, lines 21 through 23, how will a licensee's education, training, and experience be evaluated to determine whether they are fit to perform surgery? What kind of training would be required? I have 4 years of full-time surgical training that's beyond medical school and a surgical internship. So would the training be comparable, or are we talking an occasional weekend course? I think the larger question is whether it's even appropriate for the Board of Optometry alone to make these sorts of decisions without any oversight from the State Medical Board. I practice under both the Board of Ophthalmology and the State Medical Board and comply with both. I think it would be in the best interest of the public to hash these issues out now so that a fully informed decision can be made rather than claiming this is a general update and leaving all details to be determined later. And thank you. I was going to keep it brief today.
Great. Thank you, Doctor. Next up, we're going to go to Juneau to Dr. Jill Matheson.
Hi, thank you. This is Dr. Jill Matheson. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Please continue with your...
Thank you. you. I am an optometrist in Juneau and am here to support Senate Bill 36. I understand we're short on time, so I'll just kind of cut to the chase. By having such broad language in Senate Bill 36, it allows the optometry board to react via that shorter regulatory process to changes as technology advances. And I believe that what all of us are called to do as professionals is to practice at the highest level of our training. And that, I feel, is what is protecting the public. It ensures that optometrists, who are the first line of eye care in nearly every community in the state, can treat Alaskans with the most modern methods at our disposal without that costly referral to a specialist in the city. So the point is, who's better to know what those methods are than optometrists, and who knows what our education should be to perform those methods than optometrists? I've been on the board of optometry twice, one term as chair, and I know that the board members that are out there now, in the past, and I know in the future, are conservative people. I also know that the legislature still would not be totally out of the loop in the fact that they'd have that indirect oversight because the legislature approves the optometry board members. And then, you know, by the full legislature and the governor. So, you know, there are these checks and balances. Again, the regulations have to go through the Department of Law. You know, I really do feel that the reason why this bill is written so broadly is so that we don't have to come back in the future and have the, effectively waste the legislature's time in getting what we need done. And that we can react in a quicker time is going to be much better for the people of the state of Alaska. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Matheson. Next is go back to Anchorage with Dr. Scott Lindstrom.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
In the interest of time, I will be brief because a lot of the points I was going to make have already been made. Chairman Wilson, members of the committee, I thank you for your service.
Sorry, Doctor, if you can just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you for that and for your careful consideration on Senate Bill 36. My name is Scott Lindstrom. I'm an ophthalmologist, eye surgeon who specializes in diseases and surgery of the retina and vitreous. I've practiced in Anchorage over 20 years. I'm currently president of the Alaska Society of Eye Physicians and Surgeons. I speak to you as a surgeon with over 25 years of experience caring for and performing surgery on patients' eyes. More importantly, I speak to you as a concerned citizen regarding this bill. Senate Bill 36, as it is written, is the most expansive optometric scope of practice legislation in the nation, contrary to what we've heard before. This bill would give the optometric board full authority to determine which invasive, diagnostic, and surgical procedures optometrists may perform on patients' eyes. It's important to understand what the optometry board consists of. It consists of four optometrists and one layperson. There's no medical doctor, no surgeon on the board. They are making decisions regarding medical treatments and surgeries, and there's no surgeon on the board. I have great respect for the optometry community. Many of them I consider friends. We work closely together treating patients. They complete a four-year college degree and 4 years of optometry. Some of them do go on to do some residency training. They do play a critical role in providing quality care to the patients we both share. Does this qualify them to perform surgery on patients' eyes? Because really, behind this bill, that's what it's all about. The vast majority of those asking for this privilege have not performed surgery and have had no surgical training in optometry school. The procedures they talked about previously are, you know, very minor surgical procedures such as punctal dilation, epilation. I'm talking about more invasive surgery. I spent 13 years of my life, over 20,000 hours of clinical and surgical experience, learning and perfecting my skills. This is not something you legislate. This is something you, nor something you learn in a weekend course. The care of patients' sight is a privilege earned through many years of education. It is not to be taken lightly. Please take and examine this bill very carefully. The public protection of the public is paramount. I and the Alaska Society of Eye Physicians and Surgeons ask that you oppose this legislation. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Doctor.
Thank you.
Next up is Dr. Karpik from Kenai.
Hello, Senators. Thank you for your time. My name is David Karpik. I'm a board-certified optometrist speaking in support of SB 36. I received my Bachelor of Science in Pre-Medicine and Psychology with minors in Biology and Chemistry before completing the 4 years of optometry school, earning the OD degree at The Ohio State University. Many of the instructors and instruction directly overlapped between medicine, veterinary medicine, and dentistry at that school, as well as others. Following school, I completed a residency program through Pacific University. In my formal training, I learned from many skilled vision scientists, ophthalmologists, and optometrists. Later, I worked in a large optometry and ophthalmology practice in Fairbanks for 8 years, providing a full range of medical eye services before purchasing a practice in Kenai, which has become the largest eye care facility on the peninsula. We cover from Kenai to Seward and receive referrals from medical specialists throughout the peninsula and beyond. There is no normal day here. We find ourselves caring for injuries, infections, providing vision care, and chronic systemic diseases with eye implications are reported back. We refer back and forth to various primary eye care or primary care providers, subspecialists, and ophthalmologists, primarily in Alaska and Washington, but sometimes beyond. I practiced in Alaska for 12 years total. I came to this state in awe of its beauty in both place and person. I came to the state in spite of an antiquated, at the time, optometry law that initially didn't allow me to practice to the full scope of my fresh training. This law was patched and improved in 07, but times and training have continued to advance in the past decade. I support SB 36 due in part to its simplicity, and it would replace the patched-together, rigid, and aging current optometry law that has needed to be continuously changed previously to keep up with updates in practice. These updates go back almost 100 years across the nation. The prescribing professions are typically regulated by their state boards. This is the case with dentistry, medicine, and nursing. SB 36 sets up an elegant framework parallel to these boards. As education, technology, and research continuously change best practices, regulation by board ensures protection of the public, alongside timely updates in practice, which allow for optimum care for Alaskans. Please support SB 36. I thank you, each of you, for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Doctor. With that, that ends everyone that's testimony on who's called in. Is there anyone else in the room that did not get a chance to testify that would like to testify at this time? Okay. With that, we'll conclude. We'll close public testimony and set this bill aside. Are there any members from the committee? Comments? Sorry, members. Any comments from the committee? Okay. Thus concludes our business of Health and Social Services Committee for today. Our next committee will meet Monday, February 6th, to hear an overview of the department and its consultants on the three recently released privatization feasibility studies. Members are encouraged to forward any questions to my office in order to focus some of these presentations. On Wednesday, February 8th, we'll hear Senate Bill 20 by Senator Meyer and take public testimony on that bill. And on Friday, February 10th, we'll hear Senate Bill 32 from Senator Hughes and take public testimony on that bill. Thank you guys that came out to testify and to the committee. And we are adjourned at 2:58.